I want to read a passage this morning from the 12th chapter of John. Begin reading with about verse 20. And there were certain Greeks among them that came up to worship at the feast. The same came, therefore, to Philip, which was of Bethsaida of Galilee, and desired him, saying, Sir, we would see Jesus. Philip cometh and telleth Andrew, and again Andrew and Philip tell Jesus. Jesus answered them, saying, The hour is come that the Son of Man should be glorified. Verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. He that loveth his life shall lose it, and he that hateth his life in this world shall keep it unto life eternal. If any man serve me, let him follow me, and where I am, there shall also my servant be. If any man serve me, him will my Father honor. That's reading from verse 20, continuing through verse 26. Of the 12th chapter of John. Now in this case, Jesus has gone up to the feast at Jerusalem, and there are many people there, but among them it mentions some certain Greeks that came up there, desiring to see Jesus. And they met up with Philip, one of Jesus' disciples. They let him know, we want to see Jesus. So Philip went and got his buddy Andrew, and they went to Jesus, reporting there were some Greeks there that wanted to see him. Jesus said, The hour has come that the Son of Man should be glorified. Verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. Now this is a great truth. And there's a great secret involved in it. Jesus himself could not bring forth fruit without dying. In order for him to be glorified, he had to die. You remember in the 24th chapter of Luke when he joined the two disciples walking along the Emmaus road on the Sabbath morning, and they were going along, and the conversation was about what had happened. Jesus had been crucified, and there hopes had been dashed, and their hearts had been crushed, and they were in deep grief and disappointment. Jesus just listened to their talk a little bit. Finally he said, Oh, you fools and slow of heart to believe. Ought not Christ to have suffered these things and entered into his glory? A strange route to glory indeed. the path that Jesus went. But he said, the hour has come now that the Son of Man should be glorified. And he explained that the way he was going to be glorified was by dying. Except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone, but if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. Jesus was that corn of wheat. Jesus fell into the ground and died. Eternity will tell how much fruit that brought forth. We can never evaluate that until eternity comes, because it's still bringing forth fruit. And it will still continue to bring forth fruit as long as time lasts and the door of mercy is open. That dying of Jesus will still continue to bring forth fruit. But Jesus recognized, I can't bring forth this fruit except I die. But if I die, there'll be some fruit come out of that. He spoke this directly concerning himself, but in the next verse, he turned right around and applied the same thing to us. He that loveth his life shall lose it, and he that hateth his life in this world shall keep it unto life eternal. That's us he's talking about now. Let us never think that we can bring forth any fruit for God without dying. There must be a dying out to self. I've been preaching about self here for several Sundays, and I'm still preaching about self. When Paul said, I am crucified with Christ, he was talking about the I, the ego, the me, the self-life, the self-interest. Everything that originated within the self, he was talking about that. And now, Jesus, when he said, he that hateth his life, he's talking about a man hating his self-life. Himself. Still talking about a man denying himself. And Jesus said, if any man would be my disciple, let him deny himself. Take up his cross and follow me. Self-denial is the very first condition of discipleship. Jesus knew we could not make any success of serving him at all while contending with ourselves, so he said, just leave him to start with. Just leave that self. That's the first thing to do in starting out to serve God and be a disciple of Christ, is for a person to deny himself. Now he that loveth his life, loveth his self-life, he's going to lose it. Lose your self-life and everything that goes with it. But he that will hate his life, his self-life, hate himself, in other words, Jesus said, the 14th chapter of Luke's gospel, he said, if any man will come after me and hate not his father and his mother and his wife and his children, yea, and his own life also, got to hate himself too. And as I mentioned last Sunday, if you could just see what self does to you and the destructive power of self in your life, you would hate it. You would renounce and reject it. And use every effective means available to you to destroy it. Self. Let him deny himself. He that loveth himself, his self-life, he'll lose it and lose everything that pertains to it. But he that will hate his own life, his own self-life, shall keep it unto life eternal. In Romans, the 8th chapter, the 13th verse, he says, if ye live after the flesh, that old self-life, ye shall die. The result of people living to please themselves, and many are doing that, too many saints are trying to do that. Maybe some folks right in this room are in that category. Protecting themselves, their self-life, and living for themselves, planning their life and laying it out according to their own self-desires. There are many that are doing that, but he says the end of that's death. People that live that way, the end is death. And not just when you quit breathing, but he's talking about spiritual death, eternal death, and separation from God. You and I cannot seek to please ourselves and seek to be pleased and maintain a spiritual life. It cannot be done. He that will live after the flesh shall die, but if we through the Spirit do mortify, destroy, put to death, crucify the flesh or the members of the body, the self-life, we shall live. Now that's simple, isn't it? That's right straight down plain. Anybody ought to be able to understand that. Try living for yourself and you're going to suffer death. Mutilate and destroy and crucify the flesh, the self-life, with the affections and lusts thereof, you're going to live. Out of it will come an abundant life. Now, Paul said, I die daily. 1 Corinthians 15:31. This is a perpetual dying. I die daily. The equivalent to this is found in Abraham and his sacrifice. When God told him to make a sacrifice and told him just how to make it, and he made it just that way, laid it out there. God told him just how to lay it out there. But God didn't come right then. So it said that Abraham stood by his sacrifice and drove the fowls away from it till the sun went down. In other words, he didn't only make a sacrifice, but he guarded it. He took care of it. God hadn't come yet, so he stood right by it and protected his sacrifice. You and I die to the self-life, but things are going to come up that will tempt us to resurrect that old self-life and let it assert itself a little. It's time to guard your sacrifice. Time to hold the commitment that you've made. When you denied yourself, keep yourself denied. I die daily. Every day you'll have opportunities to assert yourself. But just guard your sacrifice. Don't do it. Refuse to do it. Refuse to seek your own self-interest any day, any time, in any situation. But keep yourself under. Paul said, 1 Corinthians 9:27, he says, I bring under my body and keep it in subjection. I just keep it down. I keep beating it and whipping it and holding it in subjection. I die daily. It's a perpetual thing. Jesus told us, and this is the key, and it's a knockout blow to the self-life. Folks, if you follow this that Jesus told us, I'm going to recite it to you in a moment, but if you follow this, I'll guarantee you your self-life won't have much chance, if any, to assert itself. Jesus said in Matthew, the 7th chapter and the 12th verse, therefore, whatsoever ye would that men should do unto you, you do likewise unto them. Now, folks, that's a knockout blow to self-life anywhere, anytime, and anybody. People just can't follow that through and live that and cater to themselves anytime. When you treat other people just exactly like you want other people to treat you, folks, this is the basic principle of human relations. And Jesus laid this down as a basic principle for you and me to go by. And to violate this is to violate the basic principle and teaching of the Lord Jesus Christ, and therefore is sin. You treat anybody in any kind of a way that you wouldn't like to be treated, that's sin, just plain old sin, S-I-N, sin. It's just a violation of the basic principle that Jesus laid down for us in our relationships one with another. Whatsoever ye would that men shall do unto you, do ye likewise unto them. If you're treating people in a way that you wouldn't like to be treated, folks, I'll tell you, a lot of people are doing that. Some of us are doing that. We're treating people and talking about people and thinking about people in ways that if the table gets turned, look out. You ought not to do me this way. You ought not treat me this way. But they just got through treating them that way, or somebody else. Oh, I think it's real true. Somebody wrote to Ann Landers, I referred to this 2 or 3 Sundays ago. They wrote to Ann Landers, and they practically drew a picture of somebody in their letter, just lined it out so it could hardly be mistaken, and said, and if you'll just publish this in the paper, this party reads your paper and or your column, and maybe they'll shape up. Well, Ann published it all right, and in her notary reply says, here's your letter, but don't count on it too much, says nobody ever recognizes themselves. Well, I think that's pretty true. We just get through giving somebody else a little tongue lashing, but let it turn around and come on us, look out. You ought not to have treated me this way. We don't recognize ourselves, do we? It never occurs to us, I was just doing that a little bit ago to them or somebody else. Now here it's coming back to me. Jesus said, that's the way it's going to be. With what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. And with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you again. So my advice to you, and what I think is real good advice, is put it out just like you'll be glad to see it coming back. Because it's going to come back just like you put it out. But after all is said and done, my conclusion is that the real measure of the prevalence of the self-life in an individual comes in those times of decision that are entirely within themselves. Nobody else knows anything about it. We see somebody in a situation or condition, they need help in some way or another. And I'm able to help them. They don't know I'm able to help them. And no one else knows I'm able to help them. So it's a matter just right within me. I'm conscious of the fact that I have the resources I can help this person in this condition they're in. The decision I make then is the important thing. Nobody else is ever going to know anything about it. They won't even know that I had any way or means of helping this person in this situation. And I can go on in the same grade that I'm in and with the same respect and esteem of the people that I'm in and just let it go by. The measure of the prevalence of the self-life shows up right in your reaction to those kind of situations, things that are inside of yourself that no one else knows anything about. Now, we might do a lot of things and help out in a lot of ways. The church has certain projects that it sets forth, and someone might feel, well, now here's this going on. Had some canning going on out here the other day. Every once in a while we have something of this sort or some other sort going on. Somebody might feel, well, I guess people expect me to get in there and help when something's going on. It's kind of expected of me, and I may lose a little grade and esteem if I don't get in there and participate, so I get in there and participate. Now, that kind of a thing, it could be taken as self-denial. But actually, it could be, and in some instances is, a kind of a counteracting thing. The idea back of it, I want to hold my grade. I'm promoting myself a little bit here. While it looks like I'm denying myself and getting out here and doing some work for God, actually, I'm just doing this to kind of build up myself, hold my grade. Keep the esteem of the people. Kind of a counteracting thing. But what I'm talking about is things right inside of you that the decision is there and no one will ever know anything about it. How you react to that. What kind of a decision you make in that situation. Brother Chandler used to teach us that if you are a listener in a conversation that's cutting somebody to pieces, destroying somebody, gossip, rumor, whatever, and you know facts that would hush that up and stop that thing and save that fellow, but you don't want to get involved. I've got some good friends here on both sides. I don't want to incur the ill will of any of my friends here. So you just sit by and let them butcher that person and destroy them and kill their influence and cut them down, and you know facts that would offset all of it. But you just let it go by. He said, you're guilty. You're responsible. Self can play a big part in those kind of things. But I say that if you can stand by and let somebody's influence be destroyed and somebody cut down through gossip or rumor or something, and you know facts that are different from that, and you don't speak up, how can you go home and look yourself in the face in the mirror? You better examine your own conscience a little bit if you can do that. And just remain aloof from things that's actually destroying and cutting down and mutilating people, and you know it isn't true, and you know facts that would clear it all up, but you don't want to get involved. You better examine your conscience a little bit in those kind of situations. Jesus said in the 6th chapter of Matthew, lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, but rather lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Now here's one place where you can just be real selfish, and that's when it comes to laying up treasures in heaven. That's what Jesus said for you to do, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. You can't very well lay up any treasures in heaven for anybody beside yourself, but you can certainly lay up good treasures there for yourself. But he said, don't lay up for yourselves treasures upon earth. He never said, don't lay up anything. Some people take that text and they say, well, we can't have any reserve at all. Jesus said, don't lay up anything. I don't know what he's talking about. He's talking about your self-interest in that, and just laying up for yourselves. In the 9th chapter of Joshua, we have the case of the Gibeonites. Maybe you remember about them. They heard about the children of Israel and all of the victories the children of Israel was having, and how that they had been putting down one king after another king and conquering territory and moving on in, and they decided, we don't have a chance against them folks. We're going to have to use a little subterfuge on them. We're going to have to exercise a little guile. So they got them some old moldy bread and some old worn out shoes that are just kind of tied onto their feet. And they went over there and they met Joshua and they said, we're from a far country. said this bread was right fresh out of our ovens the day we left. Now it's all moldy. And our shoes were good new shoes on our feet. But look at them now. We've come from a long way, and we want to make a league with you. We've heard about your exploits, and we want to make a league with you. And so, Joshua made a league with them. He fell for that. Then after he'd made a league with them, he ran on to them over there just a day or two later. There they were, right there next door neighbors. But he couldn't destroy them. He'd already made a league with them. But the way he handled that thing, he subjected them to perpetual servitude. All the days of their lives they would be hewers of wood and drawers of water for the children of Israel. He couldn't destroy them, he'd made a league with them. But he put them where they couldn't hurt anybody or cause any trouble. Perpetual servitude. Hewers of wood, drawers of water. This is a fair type of self. Self is a very destructive thing and can just manufacture all kinds of excuses to justify us in the things that we're doing. Have you ever heard people just sit down and bring excuse upon excuse upon excuse to justify them for something that they're doing that isn't justifiable at all? But that old deceptive self, it'll just manufacture all kinds of excuses for people for what they're doing. Jeremiah the prophet said, chapter 17, verse 9, he said, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it?" Ann Landers says, "No man recognized himself." And I affirm that to be true, that we don't. Who can know it? Who can know his own heart? The psalmist said in the 19th psalm, he said, "Who can discern his own errors? Cleanse thou me from secret faults." And this same man said at another point, "What I see not, teach thou me." That's the attitude that saints should live in all the time. What I see not, teach thou me. And remain open for teaching, for instruction, for divine guidance in all of our affairs of life. Self is a very wily thing. And it'll deceive us just like those Gibeonites deceived Joshua and the Israelites. And it'll gain some prominence with us and cause us to kind of make a league with it because we're deceived by it. And it just manufactures all kinds of excuses for us doing the things that we do. And the Bible said at one point, he said, "All the ways of a man are right in his own eyes. But God trieth the reins." Let's give God a chance. Let's submit ourselves to Him. Open our hearts and minds to Him. Regardless of how things look to me, let's give God a chance. He tries to arrange. It's a foregone conclusion. Leave me to myself. I'm right. All the ways of a man are right in his own eyes, and just leave him alone. He's right. Every man's right, whatever he's doing. But God tries the reins, so we need to give God a chance. Let God deal with us and guide us. The psalmist said, "Search me, O God, and know my heart, and try me and know my thoughts. See if there be any wicked way in me." But he didn't stop there. He went right on and said, "If you find any wicked way in me, lead me out of it. Lead me in the way everlasting." Amen.